And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a loaded show for you coming up today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Stephen Holder from The Athletic covers the Indianapolis Colts. He'll join us at 7:30 to break down the move made yesterday. Carson Wentz heading to Indianapolis. Looking forward to that conversation with Stephen. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock. Terry Criss drops by at 8:30, and then David Oven, our friend from The Athletic, at 9 o'clock. So a whole lot to get to on the show here today. Joe Rexroad, how are we doing?
We're doing okay. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Doing great. Ryan Porth, how are we doing? I'm sure you're looking great today, as always.
You guys haven't seen me all week, but still feeling great.
That's good. That's good. We're glad that you've done that here. Joe, let's start on the Lady Vols, a 75-67 win last night against a very, very good South Carolina Gamecocks team. I'm trying to like rack my brain and figure out when the last time Tennessee had a win this big was. It was really impressive last night for the Lady Vols.
Huge win. And frankly, you know, I mean, a lot of nights I find myself I swear every Saturday, like Vanderbilt and Tennessee are like almost, like if they're not at the exact same time, they're like there's an hour that conflicts or something.
Right.
There's a lot of times when I find myself, you know, flipping back and forth between teams. It was great last night to have an alternative to the Preds, and the Lady Vols were as good as the Preds were bad, and it was really down 16, just an epic win. And actually, it's funny because I'm right now responding to Maria Cornelius, who has covered Lady Vols forever. Because that was my question. You know, number two South Carolina, remember they almost beat, they were right there with UConn, which tells me like they can play with anyone, this team. And when's the last time you could say that about a Tennessee team? I think it's been quite a while. She tweeted me and said it goes back to like this, you know, 17. They beat Stanford, they beat Notre Dame, and technically they were top five wins. This was under, you know, Holly Warlick. But to me, this is a 31-game winning streak for South Carolina. South Carolina has become Tennessee of SEC women's basketball. You know, this is the dominant program. So I think you might be going back to like the last time they got to the Final Four. That would be my guess. You know, so you're talking a lot of years, but man, pretty amazing. Renaya Davis is, she is on the, you know, so many great players in this program's history. And she's not going to be at, you know, the level of the very, very top ones when we're talking about Candace Parker. You know, there's three or four in there that will probably stand above everybody. But my goodness, she's up there close to 1,700 points now and just a tremendous player.
So with that in mind, as you look at this team, and you mentioned it, I mean, the game against UConn, now a win last night against South Carolina. What kind of a run, how dangerous do you think this Lady Vols team could be down the stretch here?
Well, I think they could be, you know, the UT men and women both could be around a three. Maybe this team could be a two seed now. I think they project right now around a three or a four before that win. I mean, look, what I don't know is obviously like who's going to be their one seed. But even if it is, you know, South Carolina, UConn, we know that they can play with them. So I think this team has potential to reach the Final Four because Ray Burrell is also, you know, a tremendous talent. Obviously, Louisville is a dominant team this year as well. So, you know, and then the SEC, I mean, Texas A&M is 19-1, so there's a lot of good teams out there. Stanford always, Baylor always. This team has kind of been up and down, but if you play like that, like last night, then I think you got a chance to really make a run.
And Joe, you mentioned it, as good as the Lady Vols were last night, it was pretty bad for the Nashville Predators. Once again, a 3-0 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and one of those games where, I mean, defensively, you look at the first couple of goals they gave up. One of them goes in, pops up straight in the air off of a skate and in the back of the net to end the first period. And then basically you're essentially screened by the referee on the second goal.
But those two things aside, I mean, those are bad luck plays, but it doesn't matter when you can't score goals. And right. yet another situation last night where the Predators, not very much going on in the first couple of periods. You're down heading into the third, and they find a way to start generating more looks. But just nothing converted last night for the Predators yet again, and they lose 3-0. Just right now, par for the course for this hockey team that can't really seem to get out of its own way.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, I mean, it's not like defensively it was a bad game or, you know, those goals are tough. But I think it's worse when you lose and you can't generate offense in any sport. Again, like I think like the Titans this last year, even if they had a loss or a rough game, like you knew their offense would at least make it worth watching, you know?
Yeah.
Like you'd rather be bad. You'd rather be giving up too much than not being able to generate anything. And this team is hard to watch. I mean, it just is. It's not working, you know? It's not working. And then, you know, like you said, like there's no finish. I mean, you know, Deschene had a good opportunity. I mean, they had a few chances that you want to see people bury, but man, not that many. It just seems like it's just pushing a boulder up a mountain right now for this team to be dangerous in the offensive zone.
It really does. And again, I mean, I think you can tell that frustration is starting to boil over, and Predators captain Roman Josi addressed the media after the game last night and talked about the frustration that they're dealing with. Here's what Roman Josi had to say.
How tired of you, if at all, are you? Just, you know, it just seems like the same old story with this team this season, with not being able to score and not being able to kill penalties. I mean, as a voice of this team, are you tired of talking about it and tired of being in the middle of it?
Yeah, I think everyone is. It's frustrating. I mean, we all care a lot about this game, and we all care about winning, and we're not winning right now. Like you said, there's a lot of things that we got to get better at. We're not doing those things, and it's frustrating. I think everybody's tired of talking about those things. Everybody wants to change him, and the only way we can change him is it's up to us players. We got to be better, and that's the only way we can change it. I think talking about it, it's frustrating because you don't want to talk about it anymore. So we need to go out there and change ourselves.
So that was Roman Josi after the game last night, and that's probably about as frustrated as you'll ever hear Roman Josi about anything, because nothing really seems to get to that guy. But, I mean, you could tell. I mean, again, and I've said it a few times, right now this team just seems to me like a team that's searching for answers and not finding any. I mean, they're not coming up with anything out there. And we talked about yesterday, Joe, you know, having a few days off, being able to reset a little bit, maybe healing up a little bit, playing a lot of games in a short amount of time. And then to come out after that, after a stinker last Saturday against Detroit, and come out and not be able to generate anything offensively. I mean, there's not a whole lot left to say. I mean, the frustration has got to be there at a pretty high level at this point, and they are in a battle right now against themselves, and it's not going well.
Yeah, interesting wording there by Josi. We got to go out there and change ourselves. I agree. Like his tone there. I mean, there certainly have been times, you know, especially since he's been captain, and they've had obviously frustrating stretches. Last year was very frustrating, a lot, but I think that was the right question by Skrbina there, because, like, you know, it's not just being sick of the way they're playing, but then, you know, it's the same kind of answers too after the game, because there isn't a great answer. So at some point you figure maybe they'll, you know, get sick of hearing about how, like, they're hard to watch, they're not good, they're fighting for last place, it's time to blow it up. Whose fault is it? Hines, Poyle, et cetera, you know, and do something about it. But they just don't seem capable. And that's as that goes on, you know, I think the pressure goes up and up.
Yeah, and, you know, Columbus, I mean, I didn't think Columbus played great last night. I mean, they did a good job of getting in shot lanes, but, you know, Porth, we talked about it yesterday. I mean, this was a team that defensively has been struggling as of late. I mean, they were giving up more than 4 goals a game over their last stretch here, and They didn't look like that team last night. They clamped down, and the Predators, when they got their chances, they just had no finish to them whatsoever.
Which has been par for the course for most of this season, the lack of finish. You know, it's I don't really understand what's going on offensively with this team. And I understand when you look at the depth chart that the names are not as talented as they have been in recent years, but there's really no excuse for it to be this bad. I mean, you've got, like last night, barely even noticed Philip Forsberg.
Yeah.
Luke Cunningham, you know, had a couple of nice chances. He was the only one in my memory to get in front of the net. I don't know what is going on offensively with this team. And it's, you know, I've said it many times on this show before this season, is that these losses, they're coming in regulation, and they don't really feel close in a lot of these losses. Like last night, it would have felt like a victory just to score a goal, because they didn't really put a lot of pressure on Elvis Merzlikins. And like you said, this is a team, Columbus, they were averaging over 4.5 goals allowed per game in their previous 8 games. They had given up 7 goals to Carolina in their previous outing, and they had their way last night with the Preds.
They did, and now the Predators are 29th in the NHL with 2.19 goals per game. And really, like, you know, there's a 5-goal performance against Columbus to begin the season, obviously the 6-goal performance against Florida. Outside of that, I mean, and I know you can't just take those two games away, but those two games to me appear to be total outliers at this point. And outside of that, offensively, to your point, I mean, it just doesn't – number one, it doesn't feel like they can get anything done. And number two, Joe, in the offensive zone, and I know we've talked about that a lot this week, and we're going to continue to talk about it in the next segment, they just look lost in the offensive zone. And that, to me, that's so discouraging moving forward, because that hasn't gotten any better from my vantage point.
Yeah, look, there's a couple things when it comes to, you know, coaching. One is, you know, again, because I mean, we are like in the comments on stories and Twitter, it's basically like who's getting fired, you know, who's responsible, whose fault is it? And I'll continue to say, you know, John Hines was hired a year ago. It was a big move to fire Peter Laviolette, you know, and an understandable, as we've all talked about, you've talked about it, you laid it out there, you know, Peter Laviolette seems to have a shelf life at every stop, but that's a big move. And the idea that, I mean, you had other options and people who were more proven than John Hines. But to me, like, the idea that he would be, you know, like on some kind of hot seat right now, I think is ridiculous. However, I also think I look at how they play, and I mean, he's got to take a big chunk of responsibility, and he's got to, you know, obviously have a big role in figuring it out. Like, what he wants them to do and what they're doing, like, there's something that's just not taking, you know, something that's not connecting. So, so I think it's, again, one of those two things being true at once. I mean, like John Hines, you know, he just got here. It feels like to me, I know it's been a little bit more than a year. So ease up on like everything's his fault, but at the same time, it's okay to say, John Hines, what is happening here? What is going on? And what can you do to fix it? He's moving, changing around lines. He changed Arvidsson's line and things like that yesterday. I mean, he's trying some different things, but man, I mean, they just had all week to look at this. We heard different bits of analysis all week, and then you come out with that last night. Pretty discouraging.
And we'll continue to discuss that on the other side when we come back, and focus in specifically offensively with the Predators. How much longer can this continue before changes are going to have to be made? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Taken back away by the Blue Jackets and lofted in, and that will do it for this one. Final score from Columbus. The Blue Jackets score 1 per period and beat the Nashville Predators tonight 3-0.
Well, I think tonight we didn't capitalize on our chances. I actually thought we created a lot of chances, especially in the third period, we had a lot of chances. I think the games before, we didn't create enough. We didn't get pucks deep. We didn't manage the puck well enough. We didn't really create enough chances to even score. I didn't think it was a problem tonight. I thought we had enough chances to score. But the past couple games, that was definitely the issue.
Another tough one last night for the Nashville Predators. They fall 3-0 at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I watched the game last night, and the third period, it was pretty much the same story as it's been all season long so far. The Predators are down in the third period, and offensively they start to control the game a little bit more. They control the possession and zone time and even get a few chances to go their way, but this time unable to convert and capitalize in the third period. And, you know, I'm kind of racking my brain going through the game there. I mean, Duchesne had a good chance in tight. Victor Arvidsson had a chance right on the doorstep that went off the blade of his stick, and he actually ended up in the net, not the puck. And Luke Cunning had one on the doorstep as well. I mean, other than that, the chances really weren't all that great. Roman Josi did a couple things individually in the third period to try to get things going offensively, but they just never really felt like they were dangerous or threatening at all in the offensive zone last night. So that continues to be a gigantic issue with this team.
Yeah, I mean, granted, you got some chances and you want to finish them, but you're still – it's not like you've got a whole boatload. Then you're just a snake-bitten team that's left and right missing these golden opportunities. They're still – it's more like blood out of a rock than anything right now to even get yourself in that position.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something – you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this week. Why is that? Like, why are they struggling so much offensively? Because, look, we knew this coming into the season, that this team was not as talented offensively as some of the teams in the past couple of years have been. And maybe goal scoring was going to be harder to come by. And look, not having Ryan Johansson out there is a big deal in this discussion. But it's not like, you know, they were lighting the world on fire with Ryan Johansson in the lineup to begin with. So this is, I mean, there's enough sample size at this point to realize this is a huge issue with this team, and an issue that right now I don't really see a way out of for this group. And, you know, we've talked to Duchesne about it this week. Dan Hynote joined us yesterday and talked about what the philosophy is right now in the offensive zone. The word trust has been brought up a lot. And I think that's certainly part of it, is maybe some new teammates coming in here. But you factor in all of these different combinations with the system, and I think the lesser talent that's in there right now, the lack of trust, any way you really want to take it, it's not been good. And John Hines talked about it after the game last night, about the possession in the offensive zone and how in the world the Predators can go about trying to generate more offense out of that possession. Here's what John Hines had to say after the game.
John, statistically, your team is one of the best in the league at sustaining offensive zone possession and pressure, and you had a sizable advantage in that regard tonight, but why has this team struggled to convert that significant advantage in O-zone possession time into goals?
I think it comes to, you know, as we've talked in the past, is we're continuing where, you know, if you're going to have good opportunities to win, your offensive zone time is really important, and spending time in that area is important, but you know, whether it's shots that are getting to the net, you know, needs to be better. I think, you know, we have to get to the net front in those areas more. You know, even I think when you look a little bit in the third period tonight, we had some point blank chances that missed the net, you know, so it's good ozone time. There's a, you know, guys are working in that area. We're able to keep pucks alive. We're able to spend time in that area. But then when it comes into, you know, getting some greasy goals or dirty goals where you're getting screens and tips and rebounds, you know, we haven't been in that. We're not doing well in that area of the ice. So you have time, but you're not getting the end result in those areas. So we're going to continue to hammer that home. And, you know, the other ones is when we get in, and sometimes it happens when you don't score as much as you'd like to. You know, you have, when you have scoring chances, you're trying to make the perfect shot, and some of those are missing the net. So, you know, I think you combine that, you have good offensive zone time and offensive pressure, but you're not getting the end result, and that's the most important thing.
So, Joe, that was John Hines kind of explaining what he's seeing right now in the offensive zone, and
if you're a Predators fan, I think that's just got to frustrate you, because this is the same song and dance that we've heard all season long up until this point, talking about trying to get to the front of the net, getting more greasy goals, not trying to make the perfect play. And he talks about continuing to address it. I mean, how long does that have to be addressed with this group? I mean, this is the same talking point that we've had all season long. And quite frankly, it's the same talking point that we've had for the last couple of seasons with this group. And I think right now it's affecting them to a higher degree, because the talent is not as good. And at the moment, they don't even look like they've got a plan out there offensively. But to me, hearing some of those things that John Hines threw out there about, you know, not being able to get to the front of the net or not getting there often enough and having those greasy goals, like that would frustrate me if I'm a Predators fan, because how many times does this need to be talked about before somebody goes out there and does it?
Well, and like the phrase continuing to hammer it home, you know, when it looks like we feel like we're watching the same game over and over, basically, at least in that aspect of the game, is like, man, maybe try something different. You know, what that is, I don't know. I know that Dan Hinote talked about like the blank canvas, you know, the system to a point, and it's a blank canvas. Duchesne talked about, you know, confidence and just like go score, you know. And then I thought, like last night you mentioned Yossi, I thought a couple times it almost looked like he was like, you know what, screw you guys, I'm gonna go get a goal, you know. Which, hey, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, your best players, just go, you know, change it up, do something. But
yeah,
none of it worked. But yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, 2 years ago, now I want to make sure I don't get my seasons mixed up. 2 years ago, it was like, well, they got to trade for about at least two or three people who can get in front of the net, because they have nobody on this team who can do that, you know. And of course, you know, they end up with Boyle and Simmons, and you know, not a ton of not a ton to show for it. But yeah, it's been a running constant theme here with these guys. I mean, Victor, over the last few years, the most effective net front guy has been Victor Arvidsson, jumping like a chihuahua, you know, with the little jump screen. So why can't that get fixed? You know, it's hard for me to figure out exactly how they get out of this. And I also just come back around to just, maybe they're just not very good, you know. But still, like, there's some things that we know that these guys can do, have done, that they're not doing.
Well, Robbie, you brought up Ryan Johansson, the injury earlier, and hopefully Ryan Johansson is going to be returning here soon by the end of this road trip. But when you look at the depth chart and the offensive numbers when Ryan Johansson has been in the lineup this season, they've scored 2.8 goals per game with Johansson in the lineup, and their record was 5-5. Without Johansson, they're scoring 1.33 goals per game, and their record is 1-5. And you look at I understand there's a lot of frustration around Ryan Johansson from a lot of fans, but just the sheer impact of his presence on the depth chart has a little bit of a trickle-down effect. And I look at the depth chart last night, the second line, you've got Duchesne flanked by Callie Yarncroak and Rocco Grimaldi.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Duchesne should not be skating on a line with Callie Yarncroak and Rocco Grimaldi. But they're to a point with just one injury, it's throwing a lot of things off, and it just doesn't look like they have any chemistry whatsoever in the offensive zone.
Well, it doesn't, but I mean, some of that's on John Hines as well. Like, you can't just change things up every game either. I mean, we've talked about this for how long with this group of, you know, just mixing and matching. I realize it. You know, not having Ryan Johansson in there is a big deal. We've talked about it, and it really, to your point, Porth, I mean, it throws the depth chart off, and they don't have, I think it's obvious at this point, outside of Duchesne, they don't have anybody else that really needs to be in the top six playing at the center position, but they've been forced to kind of mix and match and move people around. But, you know, at some point, you got to leave some lines together. Like, you know, Duchesne, Granlund, and Forsberg were playing pretty well together. I thought they had a game, maybe a game and a half, where they weren't generating a whole lot. I mean, that's going to happen. leave them together. I mean, they're the only thing you had offensively at that point with Johansson out. So some of this, I mean, I understand that you can't just sit there and wait for line combinations to work all day long and try to force something that's not working. But you also, I mean, it feels like they're putting them in a blender every game. And I just don't know that that's going to work moving forward.
Yeah, it's a little bit mad scientist going on here. It's like, what will tonight bring? And what kind of different combinations? Also, what did you guys think about Saros starting last night? Do you think that means anything in the ongoing discussion there?
That's a good question. I thought Pekka might start last night in that game. And again, like, you look at the game last night, you don't pin it on UC Saros with two of the goals that happened there. But I found it interesting that he was in net. I'm very fascinated now to see who goes on Saturday, because it's not like Saros had a bad game last night, just a couple of unlucky ones and had zero run support whatsoever.
Yeah, you would. I guess I would expect Pecorine, but
yeah.
Well, if not, then we have our answer. In that way, John Hines is quickly ready to flip flop at the snap of a finger as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to monitor that. But to our point, Joe, like, it doesn't matter who's in goal. If you can't get anything going offensively the way they haven't been able to the last couple of weeks, especially with Johansson out of the lineup, it's going to be tough sailing for your goaltender. I mean, you're putting a whole lot of responsibility on their plate at that point. So we'll continue to get into the Predators as we go along here in the show. Terry Chris joining us later, and we'll take your reaction on our text line all show long, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. When we come back, we will get into the news of the day yesterday. Some quarterback movement in the AFC South. Indianapolis has found their quarterback for next season. What do we think about it? Should Titans fans be nervous? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, some big news yesterday in the AFC South. A quarterback on the move to the Indianapolis Colts. The Eagles traded Carson Wentz to the Colts in exchange for a 2021 third-round pick and a conditional pick in 2022 that's a second-rounder that could turn into a first-round pick. So Indianapolis has found their quarterback, and we've talked about the possibility of Carson Wentz coming to Indy, teaming back up with Frank Reich. Now that it's happened, now that it's official, what do you think of the move for the Colts bringing Carson Wentz into the fold? And what do you think this means for the AFC South with him now the quarterback of the Colts?
I'm not sure what to think, but I'm not totally sold on either idea. Like, I think it's a move with a higher ceiling than Phillip Rivers, but it has been a while since Carson Wentz approached that kind of player. Is Carson Wentz, a quarterback beyond repair? You know, we're going to find out. Obviously, he was awful last year. He was playing in front of an awful offensive line. His play has diminished a lot. He's had serious injuries, and it's hard to imagine that those aren't a big factor in his play. And if that's true, how does he come back to what he was? I mean, when the Eagles came in here, and this was, of course, as the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles in 2017, I believe that's right, right? Or was it 2018? It was
2018, yeah.
Yeah, okay, it was 18. That guy was that was a great win. Yeah, that's right, because that was Vrabel's first year, and he went for it in overtime rather than take, you know, all that stuff. It's a great win for the Titans. One of the best games I've seen in that stadium. Also, he was a load. Carson Wentz was tough, man. He was a heck of a player at that time, and it's been a while. But I think the fact that he's reuniting with Frank Reich, you know, I think obviously, he's gotten the best football out of him in his career, so he knows him well. I think there's a chance that this could be really good for Indy, but I'm kind of like down the middle on it. I don't feel strongly either way. I know I saw Jared couldn't wait to like take a shower to proclaim to the world that this is the greatest thing to ever happen to the Titans. Like, Carson Wentz is just awful. And I don't know that I buy that at this point. I mean, I'm very wait and see on this.
Well, a man who's been very excited about Carson Wentz and who has defended him a lot is Dan Orlovsky, friend of the show here on the program. And after this move was made yesterday by the Colts, Wentz coming into the fold, Dan Orlovsky pretty high on the move for Indianapolis. Here's what he had to say yesterday following the trade of Carson Wentz.
You know, I think the reality for this move when it comes to the Colts is it places them. I think there's four teams as we sit here today that are top of the AFC conference. Kansas City, obviously. Buffalo, obviously. Cleveland, and this puts Indy in that top four. Number two, I would put Carson Wentz into the MVP conversation. I believe in him and Indianapolis that much. And then three, I'd say this. This 2021 Colts team is going to look a heck of a lot like that 2017 Philadelphia Eagles team. You're talking about a top five offensive line and run game. That's what he had in Philly. Philly didn't have a star in 2017. They had like four or five really good pieces around them. That's what Indy has, top 10 defense. I believe in Carson Wentz, and I know everyone's talking about the mental aspect and all that, but I think that this is a absolute home run for the Colts and something that the Eagles will absolutely regret two or three years from now.
So, Joe, what do you think of Dan Orlovsky there saying an absolute home run for the Eagles and that he would put Carson Wentz into the MVP conversation with the Colts?
I mean, those takes come out fresh, piping fresh out of the microwave, man. The MVP race. So this is another, and I swear I do not seek these out, but this is another, like, point of argument. Like, Jared texted me this stuff yesterday. Like, see, your guy Orlovsky is an idiot. I'm paraphrasing with the MVP discussion. He doesn't know football. I'm like, well, look, Dan Orlovsky knows football. Please. Like, Dan Orlovsky is one of the best analysts of football out there. I would have him on our show every day. Sure. I'd give him an hour every day. He's awesome. I also think, like, Dan, are you sure, man, on this one? But, you know, I'll tell you what. I mean, it did make me think, like, gosh, what am I missing? I mean, it's just hard to know because it was so bad last year, and it hasn't been really good in a while. But we do know that Carson Wentz has a lot of ability when he's healthy and right. And I do think that if you want to put it on, you know, Carson Wentz's decline, not just his own health, but also the support around him. Eagles have been in cap hell. I mean, it's gone the wrong way. If you put him in this situation now, it's a pretty good support system for him.
It is. And I think if you're an optimist, if you're a Colts fan and you're trying to come up with reasons to be excited about this trade and be excited about Carson Wentz coming in, obviously you point to his history with Frank Reich. That's probably the number one thing you're excited about. But number two, as Orlovsky mentioned there in that piece, you know, the offensive line, pretty good for the Colts. And you've talked about it. They're getting older in some spots and may have to do some tinkering and moving around there, but still a much better offensive line than he had to deal with last year in Philadelphia. And, you know, Orlovsky brought up the mental part of the game and processing the information. And he's spoken with us about that with Carson Wentz before. That to me, when you have an offensive line and the improvement that he's going to have going from Philadelphia to Indy on that front, you should be more comfortable if you're Carson Wentz dealing with that aspect of the game and being able to process information without, you know, running for your life or being scared that somebody's going to take your head off back there. Because, you know, we've talked about it with Mariota and to a certain degree with Derek Carr as well. Like when these injuries start to pile up, and they have with Carson Wentz, I think that becomes mental at times with quarterbacks as well. And you should be in a much better spot if you're Carson Wentz to deal with that with this offensive line, given how well they've protected their quarterbacks in recent years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you look at even 2019, I mean, he was 11th in the league in QBR. He was 12th in 18, you know, and 17 was obviously his fantastic year, which of course then he gets hurt and Nick Foles brings it home. But that's when Wentz was at his best, but he was really good still in 18, 19, and then it's like falling off a cliff last year. So why is that? How much of that is on him? I mean, he fought with his coach, who's now out, who was the toast of the NFL not that long ago. He's a fumbling machine.
He is.
I mean, he's a fumbling machine. last year when I watched them, I mean, he's just throwing the ball all over the place. I didn't know what was going on half the time. But, yeah, 58 fumbles over the last five seasons. That's number one in the NFL.
So many fumbles.
That's a lot of fumbles. That is a lot of fumbles. You know, but, I mean, it is also just one disastrous year of performance. I mean, if you were the Colts, and this is how they had to have been talking about this, like if you're the Colts and it's like, I'll take 2019 Carson Wentz with our run game, with our line, with our defense, with some, you know, receiver, you know, and obviously I think they're going to probably, you know, they got an offseason here to improve their team too. And Chris Ballard has done very well in that way. Just go back to 2019 Wentz. To me, I still think that is, and I understand Phillip Rivers' numbers are really good this year in the final analysis. He had some big games. I still, like, I would all day as a Colts fan or member of that organization, I would take 2019 Wentz over what you got from Rivers in 2020. And I think you have a chance. I don't know that I buy what Orlovsky's talking about here, you know, top four and all that stuff, but I think you got a chance to do more and to really make a run at something.
So when we come back, we'll introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter, and it surrounds Carson Wentz and the trade to Indianapolis. If you're a Titans fan, how do you feel about this move? Do you think it increases or decreases the Titans' chances of winning the AFC South in 2021? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Indianapolis Colts are also winners in the Carson Wentz trade. Not because they got Carson Wentz, but because they've still got Frank Reich. If anybody can fix Carson Wentz, it's Frank Reich. Make no mistake about it.
That was Stephen A. Smith on the Carson Wentz trade that sends him to Indianapolis to be the next quarterback of the Colts heading into this next season. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, what do you think of those comments there by Stephen A. that it's because Frank Reich is there, and he's been obviously a very good coach with the Colts and has some familiarity with Wentz in the past as well.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. You know, I mean, I understand the sentiment. I still think it's probably more like, I don't look at Carson Wentz like, oh, he needs some serious coaching here to figure it out. I look at it like he needs to be healthy and he needs to have, you know, again, good things around him. And that's the big thing. But Frank Reich obviously knows him well. They had some great football together previously. It is interesting that, you know, Wentz was sniping, got into a thing with Peterson this year. You know, they were like best buds and, you know, top of the league, and it all went real sour this year. But obviously it's not enough to like scare Frank Reich off. So, I mean, I think it's got to be nice for Wentz to go to a familiar coach who he's had success with. But I think it's still a lot more about him being healthy, figuring his own game out, and performing, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm going through my head right now, like trying to imagine what those conversations with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz were like. Like Doug Peterson throwing it in his face that he won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles, because that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe Doug was saying, well, I'll just go get Nick Foles back then. Darn it. Maybe they will.
What a power move.
They need a quarterback now.
They sure do. Bring him back home for the third time in Philadelphia. Let's introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. How does the Carson Wentz trade to the Colts make you feel about the Titans' chances of winning the AFC South in 2021? And the options are you feel better about him, you feel worse about it, or you feel the same. 126 votes are in so far. 63% say they feel the same. 25% say they feel better about the Titans' chances of winning the division, and only 12% say that they feel worse about the Titans' chances of winning the division with Carson Wentz in the fold.
All right. I do want to make sure that I understand the terms here. Because like as of yesterday, when the Colts didn't have a QB other than Jacoby Brissett, then you got to feel, I mean, like you should automatically feel worse, right? They have a QB, but this is, we're talking compared to last year.
Correct.
Yeah. Like, if I was voting in this poll, I think that I would – I think I actually would say feel worse, but it would be, like, barely, you know? I mean, it's a tough one. Probably feel the same. I would think feel the same wins. That'd be my guess.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dan texts in and says, this Wentz trade is a wait and see with a possibility of being a long-term good thing for Indy, which in turn is bad for the Titans. Wentz was at his best when Reich was his OC. Then again, DeFilippo was his quarterback coach then as well. So why didn't the Bears make a serious run at Carson Wentz as well? You did hear rumors of the Bears being in there on Carson Wentz, but you know, we've said for a couple of weeks that, you know, the fit that maybe makes the most sense would be the Colts, just based on, number one, Matthew Stafford not being available anymore, but number two, his history with Frank Reich. I mean, I'm not surprised that it's gone this direction and that he's in Indianapolis. I think that's probably the most attractive situation for him. And I think of the quarterback options that we know were out there, and we've speculated on some that could be out there, but of the quarterback options that we know are out there and are realistic for the Colts. So I would take Deshaun Watson out of that discussion. Carson Wentz, I mean, he might be the one with the most upside.
Well, other than Matthew Stafford, I mean, when we didn't know what was going on with him, that to me was the Watson. I mean, that was never going to happen. I mean, as bad as stupid as the Texans are, like they're not that bad to go in their own division with him. But before it all happened, to me, Stafford was the fear quarterback who could realistically end up there. That to me would have made the Colts the clear favorite, in my opinion, in the AFC South. At this point, like, you know, without knowing all the moves that the Titans and Colts are going to make here, I think I would still have the Titans as the favorite. Although it's very, very close. It's hard. I mean, Wentz is just, he is like with Rivers, you kind of knew, he's going to go out there and he's going to have a high completion percentage and he'll probably throw for 300 yards in a lot of games and he'll throw some awful picks and you'll be pretty good. Like Wentz, you know, they could go, I mean, like if Wentz of 2020 is out there, they're going to go like 7-9, you know, but you know what? They could also go 12-4 if they get out of him what they think they can get out of him. And again, I just go back to 2019. And I think if you can get that guy, then I think you're right there with the Titans. And I think it's a very good race that we're probably looking at again in 21.
Ryan Porth, as a Titans fan that maybe has more respect and or healthy fear of the Indianapolis Colts than anyone, how does this move make you feel? How do you feel about the Colts now that Carson Wentz is in the fold?
I am scared to death. I am so scared to death of the Indianapolis Colts now because they have Carson Wentz.
is that so?
Not really. I mean, look, I understand the sentiment of being reunited with Frank Reich. That was a lot of injuries ago, and that was 3 years ago. Well, actually, really 4 years ago, you know, in 2021. I mean, the success we're talking about is in 2017. I'm in full wait-and-see mode on this one. I think it raises their ceiling but lowers their floor. And I could totally see Carson Wentz going there and just completely sputtering, and his career basically goes to you-know-what in Indy. But I guess there is a chance, because it's Frank Reich, that he's rejuvenated and becomes the Carson Wentz that, you know, maybe not MVP level, but was a pretty good quarterback with the Eagles.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, how much does he still have left in him from that standpoint? Because, I mean, Orlovsky's talked about, Joe, it's not like you just, like, lose the physical ability that we've seen Carson Wentz had. I mean, you know, Carson Wentz is not an old player by any stretch of the imagination. But I do wonder, with the injuries that he's had and just, you know, the lack of success, especially last season with the decision-making. I mean, he had a 57.4% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns, 15 picks last year. You mentioned the fumbling and how much of an issue that's been. I think the way Porth put it there is pretty good. I think if he is at his best, the Colts have a chance to be a much better team if that's the level of quarterback they're going to get. But I also think their floor just got a whole lot lower as well, because if he looks like 2020 Carson Wentz, this Colts team, I mean, they're not going to be all that good. It's going to be hard to overcome that.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Ceiling's higher, floor is lower. But, you know, if you're a Titans fan talking about the division race, obviously you hope for the floor scenario, and that wouldn't you love watching that? But the fact is, you know, he does have the potential to, you know, to make them a better team. I mean, well, I shouldn't say the fact is. That's what I believe. I believe he has a chance to do more than what Phillip Rivers could have done with that team. So, you know, several injuries ago, that's the key. You know, we do see players who are broken. I think that's one thing Dan Orlovsky didn't take into account. I mean, there are players in this league who simply, and maybe Mariota is one of them. I'd love to see him get a chance. You mentioned the Bears earlier, maybe in Chicago. I'd love to see him get a chance, you know, to prove that's not the case, but that's how he looked to me down near the end of his time here. One thing after another added up, and it affected him mentally, affected him in the pocket. You know, is that where Carson Wentz is? Is he broken? I don't know. But that's to me probably as big as anything, more than the reunion with Reich or anything like that. But when you do support a guy like that, like any quarterback is going to be supported with the Colts. Any quarterback wants a run game, pass protection, and a defense. And he's got all those things, and they're all better than what he had in his last stop.
And we'll have Stephen Holder from The Athletic, covers the Indianapolis Colts, to join us for this conversation coming up at 7:30. Going to be a fascinating conversation with Stephen about how this affects the Colts with Carson Wentz coming in as their new quarterback. And speaking of quarterbacks, Joe, you brought up Marcus Mariota. He is involved in this next discussion piece that we'll talk about. Field Yates has come out with 32 predictions for starting quarterbacks in the NFL next season, and Marcus Mariota may or may not be involved on that list. We'll discuss it coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.